Richard and I are excited to announce that we're hosting a new Parcast original called Medical Mysteries.
It explores the bond formed between real-life doctors and patients as they race to find a cure for unknown and often fatal ailments.
This is a clip of our first episode on Joseph Merrick, a man with severe deformities who was first exhibited at a freak show as the Elephant Man.
To listen to the full first episode, follow Medical Mysteries on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. We hope you enjoy the clip. On a cold Monday morning in November 1884, a canvas banner was unfurled over a shop window on Whitechapel Road in London. The crude painting showed a humanoid creature with an elephant's trunk rampaging through the jungle. It was monstrous, unfathomable.
It was the Elephant Man, half a man and half an elephant.
A top-hatted showman barked at the doctors and students trailing into the London hospital right across the street. For just 2 pence, they could see the specimen for themselves, but ladies in delicate health were advised not to step inside. The Elephant Man's condition could be quite a shock. As the man led the curious spectators in, he warned them, "Ladies and gentlemen, brace yourselves to witness one who is probably the most remarkable human being ever to draw the breath of life." And then he pulled back the curtain.
Standing on the small stage was a horribly disfigured man covered in folds of drooping, lumpy skin. His right arm was twice as big as the left, ending in a massive, fin-like hand. His feet were oversized, flat, and wrinkled, like an elephant's. His head was bizarrely distorted and covered in hard tumors. A bony mass protruded from his upper lip. And buried behind the swollen, misshapen brow were a pair of brown eyes, gentle, bright, and unmistakably human.
Imagine sitting across the desk from your doctor. The splotchy x-rays and MRIs are clipped up on the wall. The test results are in a manila folder tilted just out of your line of sight. Questions are already forming in your mind. Is it serious? What's my chance of recovery? Will my insurance pay for this?
Imagine your doctor looking you in the eye and saying, "We don't know."
When our bodies fail, we trust doctors to diagnose the problem. But medicine isn't always an exact science. Sometimes it's a guessing game with life or death stakes.
This is Medical Mysteries, a Parcast original. I'm Molly.
And I'm Richard. Every Tuesday, we'll look at the strangest real-life medical cases in history and the experts who raced against the clock to solve them.
As we follow these high-intensity stories, we'll explore medical research that might solve the puzzle. Next week, in Part 2, we'll analyze all the evidence and try to find an answer.
You can find episodes of Medical Mysteries and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is our first episode on Joseph Carey Merrick, who became well known as the Elephant Man in the 1880s. This week, we'll explore the development of Merrick's baffling condition and his doctor's attempts to diagnose it. Next week, we'll look at his improbable rise to fame in London high society and the research that might have finally explained his illness. Today, according to the CDC, about 3% of all newborns are born with congenital disorders, commonly known as birth defects. This can include anything from cleft palates to heart malformations to extra fingers or toes. Congenital disorders were just as common in the late 19th century as they are today, but the Elephant Man's symptoms were more extreme than anything his doctors had ever seen.
From the age of 5, Joseph Merrick began to exhibit strange bony growths on his face and skull. His feet and right arm grew out of proportion to the rest of his body, and his spine was curved by severe scoliosis. The skin all over his body took on a rough, lumpy texture, and folds of loose, overgrown skin hung down from his head, back, and chest. The condition progressed over the course of his life, and by the time he reached adulthood, his symptoms were so shocking that he couldn't leave the house without causing a panic on the streets.
During Joseph's lifetime, very little was known about human genetics, but his unique set of symptoms helped researchers connect the dots between a few disorders that weren't thought to have an underlying cause. For the next two episodes, we'll look at the evolving theories about what caused his condition. Was it caused by trauma his mother suffered while he was in the womb?
Was it a combination of skin disorders known as dermatolysis and pachydermatosella? And if so, how do his bone deformities fit into the picture?
Finally, we'll look at genetic research from later decades that might explain the root of his symptoms.
But first, let's start with the theory that Joseph himself accepted as the truth. Maternal impression. For this, we have to go back to the very beginning. In May of 1862, Womwell's traveling menagerie passed through Leicester, England. The menagerie was a collection of exotic animals, giraffes, leopards, zebras, lions, and elephants.
Mary Jane Merrick, a 25-year-old Sunday school teacher, was in the crowd watching the animals parade down the street. She was 6 months pregnant with her first child, and so far the pregnancy had gone smoothly. She kept a hand on her belly, dreaming of all the things they would do and see together once her child was born.
Suddenly, the crowd swelled forward, and Mary was pushed into the road. She fell right in the path of the elephants. She looked up to see a pair of thick, wrinkled feet stomping toward her. She scrambled out of the way just in time. As the elephants brushed past, she caught her breath and checked herself for injuries. She and her unborn child had made it out just fine.
3 months later, on August 5th, 1862, Mary gave birth to a perfectly healthy baby boy. They named him Joseph, after his father. Baby Joseph was in fine health for the first few years of his life.
His first medical scare didn't come until age 5, when he tripped and fell, badly injuring his left hip. The wound became infected before it could heal, inflaming the hip bone and causing permanent damage to the joint. This made it difficult and painful for the young boy to move.
For the rest of his life, Joseph Merrick would never be able to walk properly. He could only shuffle across the playground with his cane while the other children ran and played. To make matters worse, while his hip injury was still barely healing, Mary noticed something strange happening to her son's face.
A swollen lump was growing out of his upper lip. At first, it was only slightly raised, as if he'd fallen down and landed on his face. Nothing to be too concerned about. But as the months progressed, it grew into a tumor that ran across his right cheek, pressing his upper lip outwards.
Gradually, other symptoms started to develop. His skin, especially on his back and chest, became loose and rough. His right arm grew out of proportion, as did his feet, which were turning into thick, shapeless stumps. And soon, the hard lump of flesh on his lip was several inches long, resembling, rather unfortunately, an elephant's trunk.
Mary's mind went back to the parade she'd witnessed while pregnant. The elephant encounter must have scared her so badly it affected the baby in her womb. Joseph was marked from before birth by the memory of his mother's fear.
As bizarre as it sounds, this was actually a common medical theory at the time. Maternal impression, or the idea that a mother's thoughts and emotions could affect a developing fetus, gained popularity in the Middle Ages. It was believed that if a woman was particularly sad during a pregnancy, the child might be born with a predisposition towards depression or other mental illnesses.
Or, if a mother was traumatized by a certain animal, the baby would be born with resemblance to that animal.
This idea was based in folklore more than biology. By the late 19th century, the theory was already falling out of favor as doctors gained a better understanding of genetics. But while there's no evidence that specific thoughts or fears, like a run-in with a circus elephant, can cause birth defects, research does suggest that a mother's lifestyle, diet, and stress levels can impact a fetus's development.
The body's stress response is regulated by the corticotropin-releasing hormone, or CRH. This hormone is secreted by the hypothalamus, the part of the brain that regulates most bodily functions. During pregnancy, CRH is also produced by the placenta, which can lead to highly elevated levels of stress hormones in the bloodstream.
A 1996 study by developmental psychologist Janet A. DiPietro found that in mothers who reported high levels of stress or depression, their fetuses exhibited higher heart rates and were less responsive to external stimuli. Both of these factors are associated with an increased risk of anxiety and emotional regulation problems in childhood. This suggests that a mother can, in a sense, pass on anxiety or depression to their child.
Exposure to stress hormones can also impact organ development. According to a 2008 study in developmental psychobiology, quote, during the last trimester of pregnancy, exposure to the stress hormone cortisol is critical for the maturation of the cardiovascular system, the pulmonary system, renal systems, and overall fetal growth.
However, there isn't sufficient evidence linking maternal stress to more severe congenital disorders like the symptoms 5-year-old Joseph Merrick was exhibiting. It's also unlikely that one brief stressful event, like a sudden fall during a parade, would affect hormone levels enough to harm a developing fetus.
But in the 1860s, maternal impression due to the elephant encounter was the best explanation anyone could offer, and 5-year-old Joseph seemed to accept it. He grew into a lonely, shy child who spent most of his time reading. Mary encouraged his love of learning. As a Sunday school teacher herself, she made sure her son's health issues didn't keep him out of class.
The family's second child, William, was born without any medical issues to speak of. It appeared that whatever was wrong with Joseph, at least it didn't run in the family. But in 1867, the same year Joseph started showing his symptoms, Mary gave birth to their third child, a daughter named Marion. Records indicate that she was disabled from birth, but the exact nature of her disability isn't clear.
Congenital disorders are often caused by hereditary genetic problems. Even if both parents appear perfectly healthy, they still might be carrying genetic mutations that can be passed down to their children. If Joseph and Marion both had similar symptoms, it's possible that they both inherited the same mutation.
But it's also possible that the two children's health problems were unrelated. There are many factors that can cause congenital disorders, and we don't know enough about Marion's disability to suggest that it had anything in common with Joseph's.
In spite of his ever-worsening health problems, Joseph's early childhood was mostly happy. Then, in 1873, another health-related tragedy struck the Merrick family. Joseph's mother, Mary, suddenly fell ill and died from bronchial pneumonia.
It was devastating for 10-year-old Joseph. It apparently wasn't as devastating for Joseph Sr., because within 2 years of his wife's death, he had remarried to the family's landlady, Emma Wood Antill.
Emma was a widow with two daughters of her own, and the new stepsisters made Joseph's young life miserable. By this point, Joseph's afflictions had progressed from mildly unusual to downright disturbing, and the other children never let him forget it.
The snout-like tumor on his mouth and cheek had grown considerably, making it increasingly difficult for him to speak. To make matters worse, another growth was forming on his forehead, and sacks of spongy skin now hung down from the back of his skull. A foul odor emanated from the skin growths, no matter how often he bathed.
12-year-old Joseph was always the odd one out, whether it was at home or at school. To add injury to insult, his hip problems made it impossible for him to run away from the bullies.
Just a year after his father's remarriage, Joseph left school at the customary age of 13. At the insistence of his stepmother, he got a job at a cigar factory to do his part in supporting the family. This job was fine at first. It didn't require much walking, and he didn't have to interface with the public. But by the time he was 15, his right hand had grown so large and heavy that it was impossible for him to roll cigars. He had no choice but to leave his job.
However, unemployment wasn't an option. The family's finances were tight, and Joseph's stepmother, Emma, didn't have any sympathy for his disability. More than once, Emma set his plate down for dinner with a sharp remark that it was more food than he had earned.
In a misguided attempt to keep the peace, Joseph's father put him to work at the family shop in a role he thought would be well suited to the boy's condition, door-to-door sales.
Why Joseph Sr. thought his disabled, shockingly deformed son would find success as a traveling salesman is a mystery for another day. But undaunted by the challenge ahead, 15-year-old Joseph hobbled through the city, lugging his father's wares in one hand and his walking cane in the other. He knocked on the door of each residence, knowing that any unsuspecting housewife who answered would simply scream and slam the door in his face.
If a male homeowner answered the door, there was a better chance they might stand and gawk instead of immediately fleeing in fear. When this happened, Joseph launched into his best sales pitch, but because of the growth on his lip, it was nearly impossible for anyone to understand what he was saying.
As he limped through the streets, a crowd of spectators would gather around, staring and whispering. He tried to persevere. After all, he was used to being teased for his appearance. But it was impossible to sell his goods when he was constantly mobbed on the streets.
Joseph was beaten severely by his father when he came home without meeting his daily sales quota. By age 16, he stopped coming home at all, spending whatever money he made on food and cheap lodging houses. His only comfort was a small painted portrait of his mother, which he carried with him everywhere. She had always encouraged him to be his best, even in spite of his condition. If she was watching over him, there was nothing he couldn't overcome.
But positive thinking couldn't change reality. Living on his own was unsustainable. On the Monday after Christmas in 1879, 17-year-old Joseph packed his bags and dragged himself through the iron gates of the Lester Union Workhouse.
In an effort to combat poverty, the British government set up workhouses where unemployed or infirm citizens could perform menial labor for room and board. To encourage the poor to find their own jobs instead of relying on the government, the conditions in the workhouses were so horrifying that only the most desperate would resort to applying.
Joseph was given a uniform and led through the drab stone corridors to his dormitory, where he'd share a room with as many men as they could physically fit inside. Every morning at 6 a.m., he was woken up for a breakfast of bread and gruel. He'd work from 7 in the morning to 6 at night, chopping wood or unraveling old pieces of rope. After dinner, he went back to the dorms and sat down to sleep.
Because of the heavy masses of flesh growing from the back of his skull, lying down strained his neck and made it difficult to breathe. He had to sleep sitting up, with his knees pulled up to his chest, his arms wrapped around his legs, and his head resting forward on his knees.
The next morning, Joseph would wake up from a very uncomfortable night of sleep and get ready for another day of menial work. This was his daily routine for a soul-crushing 4 years. The only bright spot came in 1882, about halfway through his stay. The elephant trunk tumor on his lip had grown to be 8 or 9 inches long, and he could no longer move his mouth enough to chew, so he was taken to the infirmary. The surgeons had no useful advice on what was causing Joseph's condition or how to cure it, but they were able to remove nearly 4 ounces of flesh from his upper lip, just enough that he was able to open and close his mouth again.
And then it was back to the workhouse. For an intelligent, educated young man like Joseph, being locked away for a lifetime of labor was a depressing prospect. He wanted to see the world. He wanted to live life. But what was there to do if he couldn't walk or talk or roam the streets without causing a panic?
The answer came from a newspaper advertisement. Sam Torr's Gaiety Palace of Varieties, the most buzzworthy music hall in Leicester. Joseph knew the place well. It was just around the corner from his childhood home. For his next big spectacle, Sam Torr was looking for curiosities, novelties, as some would say, freaks of nature.
Joseph Merrick had found the perfect career.
Coming up, the Elephant Man steps into the limelight.
It seems like such a heartbreaking story, but things will get better for him.
To find out what happens next, follow Medical Mysteries for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts.